As darkness closed in, something was moving about. Andy paid little attention at first, for cattle had been coming up for water. Most seemed not to notice him. Those that saw or smelled him kept an uneasy distance. His blurry eyes made out the shape of a horse, his horse. It looked strange until he realized that the saddle had turned under its belly. He pushed himself to his feet, his legs aching, and he moved slowly and painfully toward the horse.
Whoa, son. Gentle now. Whoa.
Grasping for the reins, he found one had broken off just below the bit. He then felt for the girth's buckle.
Easy, boy. Ain't nothing gonna hurt you now.
Andy had spent a long and fitful night trying in vain to find a comfortable position on the ground. The itching was so intense that he could not help scratching the bites. That made them burn worse than before. He could see better than the evening before, but he still felt as if he were peering through a slit in a wall. Andy figured it must be around noon when Len finally appeared, following tracks from the south. He reined up and stared at Andy as if he were an apparition.
You look like wild horses have stomped on you.
Don't get too close to that windmill. There's a jillion wasps in there, and every one of them is mad.
You let a few little old wasps do all that to you?
When they hit you, you'll think they're the size of a cow. My horse threw me, then ran, losing my blanket and rope.
I'll see if I can find him.
Len had roasted bacon on a stick.
I'm fixing to do something about that wasp's nest.
He pulled several handfuls of dry grass and wrapped them around the end of a thin, dead branch from a mesquite. He dipped the grass into the fire. He then carried the blazing stick to the windmill tower. He shoved it under the nest. A few wasps came out, but most were consumed by the fire. The flames licked upward along the tower's wooden leg, burning the oil spilled from the top.
Uh-oh.
Len stepped back.
Looks like I've just played hell.
Throw some water on it.
Too late for that, even if I had a bucket.
Len backed further away from the heat.
I think me and you had better mosey along. Jericho's apt to be a little put out about his windmill.
Len saddled Andy's horse as Andy folded the blanket and tied it behind the cantle. Swinging up onto the horse, he felt stiff. The two horses and the mule danced uneasily, fearing the fire. Len kicked sand over the small blaze on which he had fixed Andy's meager breakfast.
They saw this. They'd know somebody camped here and set fire to the windmill.
How else would it have burned?
Lightning.
Squinty-eyed, Andy looked up but saw no clouds.
Yeah, they'll sure be fooled, all right.
Together, Andy and Len rode south.
Did you find anything, Len?
Hey, a few miles from where I left you. The bunch I followed stopped at an old Mexican ranch house. Jericho probably uses it as a lion camp. Remind me to put it on the map when we get back to the company. What did you find?
A jillion wasps?
Andy looked back. The fire had climbed up to the tower's platform. Once it burned all the wooden support and the cypress, the metal parts would crash to the ground.
I'll bet that mill cost $100.
Jericho can't afford it. His crew will steal more than that between dinner and supper.
After they traveled a couple of miles, Len spotted trouble.
Four riders coming our way, Andy.
Andy's vision had not improved enough for him to see them.
It's too late to hide. Let's just play innocent.
Len always had an innocent look about him, even when he was the guiltiest. As the horsemen came near enough for Andy to see them, he noted that a large man rode half a length ahead of the others.
Now I bet that's Jericho.
Yep. And you're about to meet the big stud his own self. Don't act like you give a damn. He built himself a little empire by making people afraid of him.
From what I've heard, they've got a right to be afraid.
Me and you can't afford to be. Show him the feather and he'll ride plumb over you.
Jericho Jackson looked to be more than 6 feet tall and stocky enough to weigh considerably over 200 pounds. He wasn't fat, simply large. He rode a gray horse bigger than those of the three cowboys beside him. He had a reddish complexion and hair and beard of a strong rust color, not unlike Rusty Shannon's. His dark brown eyes fastened first on Andy, then on Len with a startling intensity. He recognized Len, though he probably could not have called him by name.
Ranger, ain't you strayed a long ways from where you belong?
Rangers go anywhere they want to.
Any place but my ranch. You looking for somebody?
Maybe. Who you got?
Andy recognized two of the riders. They had been with the men the Mexicans had chased back across the river. One leaned to Jericho and said something Andy couldn't hear.
Seems like you've already made the acquaintance of my boys. They say you took something that belongs to them.
The guns? If they'll stop at that little jip joint of a store, they can get their property back.
You look like you've been run through a coffee grinder, boy. You a ranger too?
Private Andy Pickard. My horse drug me a ways.
Probably because you took him where you and him wasn't supposed to be. You rangers are always poking into my business, coming on my land without so much as a by your leave. But when you're needed, you ain't nowhere around.
When did you ever need us?
Mexican outlaws murdered my wife's nephew. Never gave him a chance. It was one time we could have used your help and you wasn't here.
That's the first we've heard about it.
And it won't be the last. I'm sending a protest to Austin.
They'll be tickled to hear from you.
He was an orphan boy. My poor wife set a lot of store by him. I'll see that Lupe Chavez pays for what they done. When I do, you rangers had better stay out of my way.
We can't, not if you break the law.
It's a damn poor law that says you can't kill a Mexican when he needs it. As far as I'm concerned, it's open season the year round on every saddle-colored son of a bitch this side of the river. Now, you men are trespassing. By rights, I could shoot both of you.
Those who try to keep the rangers away have usually got something they don't want us to see.
You all are starting to aggravate me. People with any sense are careful not to get my blood stirred up. Next time, stay off of Jericho's road. We've been watching some smoke yonder. You know anything about it?
And we noticed it, too. Grass fire, more than likely. You ought to caution your boys not to be careless with their smoking. They could burn up the whole country.
Jericho pointed eastward. His manner was stern.
That's the shortest way off of my land.
Len pointed south. His manner was stubborn.
We're headed back to the river.
He started, and Andy followed.
I said east.
Act like you don't even hear him, Andy. He's a land grabber and a thief, but he's too much of a man to shoot us in the back.
They rode about a mile. Len abruptly turned to the east.
Thought we were going to the river.
That was just to show Jericho we wasn't afraid of him. It's a long way back to Ranger Camp. You got some bad cuts and them wasp bites need attention. I'm taking you over to the McCauleys. Like Jericho said, you look like you've been run through a coffee grinder.
Andy was uneasy about bearing his upper body to the McCauley women, but they brooked no argument. He had bathed in a stock tank to wash off the dirt, grass, and other debris left by the dragging. He had also rinsed his clothing. His shirt and the upper part of his long underwear had been shredded beyond repair, but they still covered enough to meet the requirements of modesty. The older woman dug out several thorns with a needle, then rubbed him with alcohol that set him afire.
The more he burns, the more good he does. You lost some hide.
Andy drew his arms in tightly against his ribs and squeezed his eyes shut until the worst had passed.
You have more thorns, but they are in too deep. They'll have to fester out in their own good time.
I'm obliged to you, ma'am.
The daughter, Teresa, rubbed a soothing salve over the wasp stings. He enjoyed the careful touch of her fingers. Big Jim McCauley came into the room with a shirt and a suit of underwear.
Our Tony left these behind. They'll fit you better than mine would.
Many thanks.
Len tells me you talked to Jericho.
Mostly it was him that did the talking.
That's his way. He's not interested in what anybody else says. He'll either scare you to death or make you mad enough to chew up a horseshoe and spit it at him.
Andy could understand that Jericho's physical size would intimidate many, but he doubted that McCauley had any fear of him. McCauley was about as large as Jericho, and like Jericho, he was all muscle. Either man looked capable of wrestling a bull to a standstill. From what he had heard of Lupe Chavez, Andy thought he must be a large man, too. He had to be if he lived up to the stories. Neither Andy nor Len mentioned seeing McCauley's stepson with the Mexicans, who had crossed the river in hot pursuit of Jericho's raiders. They had decided it might upset his mother and sister to know he was putting himself in harm's way.
Where is the other ranger? The one who was with you last time?
Farley Brackett? He broke off from us to follow a different set of tracks.
He seemed rather nice.
You sure you haven't got him mixed up with somebody else?
He's not exactly handsome, but he's not ugly either. Even with that scar on his face. How did he get it?
He brought it home from the war. Somebody told me it came from a Yankee saber. I never asked him.
I think he is a lonely man. Has he ever been married?
I doubt he ever considered it.
Maybe he never met the right woman. Or maybe he doesn't like women.
He's just been too busy being a ranger.
Most rangers do not remain rangers forever, do they?
Who knows what any of us are liable to do?
I've never seen a really old ranger.
I'll tell him you asked about him.
Oh, no. Please don't do that.
She left her chair and hurried from the room. Her mother watched her go.
It is not seemly for a young lady to express interest in a man.
I was just trying to help. Ain't had much experience in matters such as this.
Some things you must leave alone. They will work themselves out if the Lord wishes them to.
After supper, the three men sat on the porch of the rock house. Because it was late in the day, Andy and Len had decided to spend the night before they started back to camp.
How come you and Jericho to get crossways in the first place, Jim?
There was a time long before the big war that me and him rode together. We didn't have nothing. We were both ambitious, wanting to make something of ourselves, but Jericho had a different notion of how to go about it. He saw people pushing Mexicans off their land and decided he could too. It was easy to say it was a patriotic thing to do since there'd been two wars with Mexico. I'd gone to work for Don Cipriano Chavez. He treated me good, and I took a liking to him. Jericho tried to run him off and grab his property like he'd done with some others, but the old man fought back. So Jericho had him killed. On his first husband, too. He hounded the son Lupe till Lupe took refuge in Mexico. That's when I married Juana. Putting an American name on the land kept Jericho from puffing his shenanigans at the courthouse. He's been a thorn in my side ever since, and me in his.
Looks like law ought to do something.
It does. For the most part, it looks away. Or it sides with Jericho and them that think like him. It doesn't pay to lose a war, and the Mexicans have lost two.
What about the Mexicans that were living here in Texas? They take a hand in the wars?
Maybe not directly, but most of them sympathize with Mexico. A lot of Americans claim that justifies taking away their property. Many Mexicans still claim that everything south of Nueces River belongs to Mexico. That makes Americans and their property fair game. People like Lupe Chavez figure they're only taking back what belonged to them in the first place. Both sides believe they're in the right. Those of us who try to sit on the fence take fire from both directions.
Do you see any answer?
Maybe someday. But wars last a long time. They're not just over because the cannons quit. They're over when nobody is left who remembers what the trouble was all about.
Ah! By instinct, Andy ducked low on his horse's left side, opposite the source of the fire. Len set his mount into a hard run toward a little puff of white smoke rising behind a bush. Andy spurred hard to catch up with him. In a matter of seconds, they spotted a Mexican trying desperately to reload a rifle. Andy leaped from the saddle and knocked him off his feet. The shooter fought, struggling to bring the rifle into position. Its bolt was jammed open. Andy wrested the weapon from his hands.
Turn him over, Andy.
He pulled the Mexican's hands together in front of him. He fastened a pair of handcuffs over his wrists. The man saw the silver peso badge on Len's shirt.
Ranches.
You're just upset over being a poor shot.
What do we do with him?
Take him to camp. The lieutenant will have some questions for him.
Reckon he's part of Lupe Chavez's bunch?
Could be. But there's oodles and gobs of bandits that don't belong to Lupe. Just like there's a lot of Texas border jumpers that don't ride for Jericho. He may be one of those that got pushed off of their land. Killing gringos helps him sleep better.
He might not be by himself.
It's kind of like with rattlesnakes. When there's one, you'll sometimes find more.
I'll make a quick circle and find out.
He rode out a little way, leaving Len with their prisoner.
Be careful, Andy!
Andy saw no sign that anyone had been with the shooter, though he found the man's horse tied a short distance away. He led it back.
Get on.
He motioned for the prisoner to mount. He cut a leather string from the man's saddle and tied the handcuffs to the big flat Mexican saddle horn. Anger in the prisoner's eyes began giving way to fear. Riding alongside the Mexican, Andy was aware of the man's growing anxiety. His own initial resentment ebbed. He even began to feel a twinge of sympathy.
I believe he thinks we're going to shoot him.
We ought to. It's probably against some law or other. There's so many laws nowadays, a man can't do nothing, hardly.
By the time they approached the row of tents that made up the camp, the prisoner's head was bowed, his eyes closed. Andy suspected he was praying. They rode to the headquarters tent. The camp looked to be almost deserted except for the cook and a couple of rangers standing at the mess tent. Sergeant Donahue emerged, gravely eyeing the prisoner.
What you got here?
He's taking a shot at us. I swear I felt that bullet tickle the hairs growing out of my ear.
We thought the lieutenant would have some questions for him.
Lieutenant's been called to Austin. I'm in charge.
Donahue motioned toward the headquarters tent.
Bring your prisoner in. I'll question him.
The two rangers had left the kitchen and ambled up to see what was going on. One of them was Mexican.
Tanner, Pickard, y'all go down to the mess and have Pablo fix you something to eat. Me and Manuel will talk to your prisoner.
Manuel was the only Mexican ranger in camp, and one of only two or three Andy had seen anywhere. Manuel untied the leather string that bound the prisoner's handcuffs to the horn. The man dismounted, casting a fearful look at the sergeant.
I ain't real good at Mexican lingo. Manuel knows how to question a bandit. He hates bandits even worse than the rest of us do. He lost his family to them.
Maybe he's too hostile.
They may lie to him once, but they don't do it a second time. You all go on, like I said. Get you something to eat. We'll take care of this, me and Manuel.
Manuel grasped the prisoner's shoulder and roughly pushed him into the tent. Donahue followed, closing the flaps opening behind him.
It's none of our business from here on in, Andy. Let's go eat.
Sounds like they're knocking him around.
They're not treating him as rough as what he had in mind for us. He meant to see us both dead, remember?
I hate to see anybody mishandled.
If you was to get caught by Mexican bandits, you'd figure they'd treat you like a pet? You know what your Comanche brothers did to people they captured? Like, for instance, your parents.
I guess you're right. You better go eat.
Eventually finding his appetite, Andy ate his fair share of beef.
Where'd you learn to cook so good, Pablo?
I was one time a soldier. The officer, he gives me a pot and says I must cook. I know nothing of such things, but when an officer says do, you do.
When was that?
In the war against the Americanos. Once I fight you, now I cook your supper. Pretty good joke.
As long as you don't put rat poison in the beans.
I would not do that for such a good boy as Andy. But you?
Andy carried his plate and utensils to a washtub and dropped them in.
Come back here!
Turning, he saw the Mexican prisoner running. The interrogator Manuel calmly stepped outside and leveled a rifle.
He was dead already when he came. When Manuel finishes with the talking, it is left only to bury them. It is an old Mexicano way, the Ley de Fuga.
Lieutenant Buckley don't hold with such as that.
But he's not here. I'm betting they pushed the prisoner out of the tent and told him to run.
Whatever you think, you'd best keep it to yourself. Donahue can make life tougher than a boot for them that ask questions. Anyway, you didn't see the prisoner start. You just saw him fall.
Call it a Comanche hunch.
It ain't something you could swear to in front of a jury.
Andy had seen death before, but it still shook him to look it in the face, especially when it was sudden and unexpected. He walked up as Donahue knelt beside the dead man and examined a blood-rimmed hole in the back of his shirt.
Caught him right between the shoulder blades. Damned if I want Manuel aiming at me.
Did you all have to kill him?
Look, Private, he was running away. He's just another Mexican bandit. There's plenty of them left, so it's a small loss to the world. But since you're so concerned, you can take a shovel and dig a hole for him. You and Tanner. He ain't the first. You'll find a bandit graveyard yonder way about 100 yards.
Anybody going to read over him?
Hell no. It was the devil that sent him. Lord doesn't want him.
Len walked up as Donahue was walking away.
Looks like he talked us into a digging job.
They returned to the mess tent for coffee. Manuel stood at the edge of the camp, smoking a cigarette and staring off into the gloom. Pablo saw Andy looking in Manuel's direction.
He has much hate in his heart.
The sergeant said bandits killed his family.
His papa had a farm. Not big, you know, just a little farm. But the Spanish king gave it to his great papa a long time ago. Banditos came. They shoot Manuel. They kill his papa, his mama. They carry his sister across the river. For a long time he looks, but never does he find her. So he kills bandits, and maybe sometimes he kills some who are not bandits. Many over there have tried to kill him, but some say he can never die. They say he is a son of the devil. The devil himself, maybe.
Damned if he doesn't look like it.
Just before time for bed, Donahue came to the tent Andy shared with Len and others.
Your horses need a day of rest. You and Tanner will stay around and stand horse guard tomorrow.
Andy noted that Donahue's concern was for the horses rather than the men. Guarding the company horses was usually easy duty, but boresome. Most rangers came to dread it. Andy had done his share on the San Saba.
You can start tonight, Pickard. You'll stand the after midnight watch.
Yes, sir.
Andy knew he would get little sleep before going on duty, and none the rest of the night. He was paying for having questioned the sergeant. Donahue gave Andy a long study, one eye almost closed.
Here you was raised by the Indians.
Till I was maybe 11 or 12 years old.
I got no more use for Indians than I have for Mexicans. I hope you ain't still got a bunch of Indian ideas in your head.
I don't scalp people, if that's what you mean. And I don't shoot them in the back.
You better walk a real straight line, Pickard. I'll be watching you.
Donahue walked away.
Talking too much can lead to trouble, Andy. You better learn to keep quiet. Like me.
The raid was more likely here near the border than it had been on the San Saba, so Andy fought the sleepiness that kept tugging at his eyelids after he went on duty. Out west, it might not have mattered if he gave in to it, so long as an officer didn't catch him. Here, it could lead to deadly consequences if either Texan or Mexican raiders decided to make a try for the Ranger's remuda. A man could get killed before he came fully awake. The ugly image of the dead prisoner kept rising before him. He pictured what Rusty Shannon's reaction might have been had he seen what Andy had witnessed. A vague figure moved in the night. A man walked among the horses, bridling one and saddling it.
Who are you?
Manuel.
What are you doing out here afoot in the middle of the night?
I have business across the river. Sergeant Donahue, he knows.
You already killed one today, isn't that enough?
It will be enough when they are all dead.
Manuel rode toward the river, disappearing like a malevolent ghost into the darkness. Farley Brackett rode in about noon, hunched in weariness. Andy was standing horse guard. Farley reined in beside him.
Y'all didn't wait up for me.
We figured you'd come on back to camp.
I might have needed you if I'd had a little bad luck.
We figured you're man enough to take care of yourself.
I am. Many a state policeman found that out to his regret. I wish you and Tanner hadn't rode off with the pack mule. I ain't et in 2 days. Damn a country where you can't stir up at least a squirrel or a prairie chicken. I came near shooting a javelina hog. You been in a fight?
Wasps. I lost.
The country's full of bandits, and you waste time doing battle with wasps.
Where you been all this time?
I followed them cowboys plumb to Jericho's headquarters. The place is like a fort. The Spaniards that built it must have been awful scared of Indians.
Len and me, we saw Jericho himself.
So did I. He came in just before dark. He was damn mad about something. I couldn't sneak up close enough to hear what his trouble was.
We got so close, we could have counted his red whiskers if we wanted to.
I got close enough to see what I went for. And I didn't let a few little wasps booger me away, neither. Wasps. What are the Rangers coming to?
Farley turned toward camp.
I've been about to start gnawing on my saddle strings. Has that Mexican Pablo called dinner yet?
Not that I've noticed.
At mealtime, the cook hammered on an iron rod bent in the shape of a triangle. The sound could reach for a mile. Andy wanted to hear more about Jericho's headquarters, but asking questions would subject him to continued unpleasantness from Farley. He saw that a couple of the company horses had grazed far enough to be almost out of his sight. He trotted his mount around them, gently hazing them back toward the main remuda. Farley had finished eating by the time Andy got to the mess tent. He sat facing Donahue, cradling a cup of coffee in his hands. Andy set down a plate of beef and beans, then sat across from Len at the table.
You say you saw Jericho's men branding cattle, Brackett?
A steer herd it was. It looked to me like they was putting a trail brand on them. Probably getting ready to drive them north to the railroad. I wasn't close enough to read the original brands.
Well, that connects with the report Manuel brought back from Mexico. Our spies told him Jericho's putting together a big trail herd, and the Chavez gang plans to capture it. They want to get even for that last sachet Jericho's men made across the river.
It was not a private's place to ask unnecessary questions. Andy assumed the sergeant intended for the Rangers to set up an unpleasant reception for Chavez's men.
What's the chance, Sergeant Donahue? We'll get Lupe Chavez himself.
Not good, Tanner. We've never been able to catch him on this side of the river. Just like we never caught Jericho at anything that would stick against him.
Cutting off a chance for more questions, the sergeant strode toward the headquarters tent. He stopped at the opening.
I'm taking 8 men with me on a special detail. We start in half an hour.
He pointed to Andy and Len first, then nodded at Farley.
I thought me and Andy was going to rest a little.
You can rest when you get old, if you live that long. Now roll your blankets and saddle up. I don't abide laggards.
Sergeant Donahue dropped the men off singly at intervals.
You'll each patrol your section along the river. Watch for Mexican raiders, but don't challenge them. When they cross, get word to the men on either side of you, and that word will work its way up to me. We'll all join together and quietly follow them to Jericho's herd.
Hadn't we ought to stop them before they get here?
Damn it, Tanner, you ask more questions than an old maid school teacher. Can't you just follow orders?
Always did. I'd like to know the reasons, is all.
We're not doing this to save Jericho's cattle. We're doing it to cripple Lupe Chavez. I figure Jericho's men will whittle them Mexicans down right smart before we have to step in and pick up the leavings.
Jericho's apt to lose some men.
If so, we can mark them off the wanted list.
Donahue dropped Andy a few miles after he dropped Len.
You'll ride downriver far enough to meet Tanner. Then you'll turn and go back upriver till you meet Brackett. The bandits will likely cross over in the dark, so hit the saddle as soon as it's light enough to see tracks. And don't let Tanner drag you into any long-winded conversations. You're liable to miss something.
Since no bandits were likely to cross the river in daylight, Andy saw no harm in resting a while. The sergeant might not approve, but what he didn't know wouldn't hurt him. He awakened to see the sun going down. Watching the riverbank for tracks, he'd moved downriver in an easy trot. Eventually, he met Len coming toward him. Len dismounted and stretched his long legs.
I see that no outlaws have shot you yet.
It's so quiet I could hear the sun bump as it went down. I think Donahue saved the most likely stretch of the river for himself.
Are you spoiling for a fight?
Jericho's men may not leave enough of them to give us a decent scrap.
It doesn't matter who gets them so long as they're got. It'll be justice if some Jericho's bunch are got, too. There's no saints on either side.
Riding back the way he had come, Andy could see little by the scant light of a quarter moon. He wished for bright moonlight, but he knew this kind of night would be a border jumper's preference. The darker, the better. He made out the vague form of a man riding a burro across a wide, shallow stretch of the river. He drew his rifle, but soon slipped it back into its scabbard. One man on a burro hardly constituted a raiding party. He could imagine many reasons for the crossing. The rider could be going to or from a sweetheart. He could have family on both sides. Or maybe he was just stealing a burro. Whatever his mission, it was not likely to be of concern to the rangers. But seeing the lone man reminded Andy how easy it was to pass between the two nations. The boundary was too flimsy to be a challenge to anyone determined to cross over. Just before daybreak, Andy had decided to take a rest. He spotted a horse walking toward him from the west. He stepped quickly to where he had his mount staked and put his hand over its nose to prevent it from nickering. Not until the rider was almost upon him did he see clearly enough to recognize Farley from the way he sat in the saddle.
You're awful early. See anything?
Damn, I didn't even see you. Don't you know you could get shot surprising a man that way?
Shooting me would have pleased you, wouldn't it?
It'd caused me a lot of aggravation talking to all them lawyers. I'd rather just ignore you. I take it you ain't seen anything either.
Nothing but a Mexican on a burro a while after dark. Probably seen a woman.
Good time of night for it. You ever had a sweetheart, Badger Boy?
Always been too busy.
For a long while, I've known you're sweet on my little sister. She could do better for herself.
Farley turned his horse around and started back upriver.
Go on back to sleep.
The sergeant showed up about the middle of the afternoon, checking each man's position.
I hope you ain't been asleep and let something go by you.
I've had my eyes open.
Some people have their eyes open and still don't see past their shadow.
Nothing's crossed over except a couple of buzzards and a man on a burro.
Maybe. I suppose if that loudmouth Tanner had found anything, he'd be up here by now to tell you about it.
I expect so.
Tonight'll be another dark one. Get an early start in the morning. If you find that they crossed in your sector, fetch Tanner, then send word up the line to me. Each man will relay the message and then ride down to where you're waiting.
You don't want me and Len to start following the tracks?
No. Tanner'd be faunching around wanting to fight. He'd likely spring the trap too early.
I can see that you don't think me and Tanner can do the job. Why'd you bring us with you?
Can't always have my pick. I make do with what I got. Sometimes it ain't much.
Andy's face warmed. Watching the sergeant ride away, he began thinking of comments he should have made in rebuttal. Such ideas usually came too late. Andy had ridden downriver toward Len's solitary camp. Len was at the halfway point, waiting. He lay in the meager shade of a mesquite.
Donahue said me and you aren't supposed to follow the tracks. Just wait till everybody else gets there. He doesn't want us getting in a fight till everybody's ready.
He doesn't know how good a fight we can put up by ourselves, me and you. We're as good as any he's got.
Donahue doesn't seem to like me much. I don't know why. It makes me wonder if I ought to be a ranger at all.
Even the rangers wouldn't get you away from people like him. You'll run into his kind wherever you go.
I guess.
You hungry?
Yeah, I fixed a little breakfast, such as it was.
I happened onto a fat young kid goat running loose. He looked lost. So I declared him the property of the rangers. Us two rangers, anyway.
Some people would call that stealing.
Looked like a stray to me. I don't see nobody claiming to own him. He probably swam across the river.
Andy doubted that. He also doubted that Len had made much of a search for the owner. But the goat had already been butchered. It hung by its hind legs from a tree limb.
Whoever it belonged to, he'd probably call it a shameful waste to let that meat spoil.
After helping Len put away a good part of the kid, Andy made his way back down to his own camp, then beyond to the point where he expected to meet Farley. Farley showed up after a time. He had a jug tied to the horn of his saddle.
Where'd you get that?
I found a Mexican come across the river with a mule load of this contraband. Ain't been no whiskey tax paid on it.
Did you put him under arrest?
No. A working man's got to make a living whichever way he can. I just found him one jug and let him go on his way.
You're not a judge.
He rode off happy as a pig in the sunshine. It was like I'd done him a favor by not shooting him.
Some favor? You swindled him out of that jug.
He was breaking the law. I had to do something. I best turn back. Sergeant says they're liable to come across tonight.
See that you don't go to sleep in that saddle.
Farley took a corncob stopper from the jug and tilted it over his arm. Guadalupe Chavez wiped his bushy black mustache with the back of his hand. He passed the bottle to his nephew.
It would be my wish that you not go tonight, nephew. I had a bad dream about this.
Tony Villarreal tipped the bottle upward.
Oh. I had a dream too, but it was a good one. I welcome a chance to poke Jericho in the eye. Besides, you are sending some good men with me. Why do you worry about me, but not about them?
They are not of my flesh and blood. You are.
Tony stood nearly a head taller than his uncle. Despite his fierce reputation, Lupe Chavez was small in stature, not much over 5 feet, but still as wiry as a half-grown boy. Some of his facial features resembled Tony's mother's, though the harsh demands of an outlaw life made him look older than his actual years. His hair remained black as a crow's wing, despite the furrows time and hardship had carved into his dark brown skin.
If God smiles on us, I will bring you Jericho's ears.
Be careful that you do not lose your own. Jericho may have the Rinches on his side. They are gringos, but they can be terrible when their blood is hot.
Their blood spills as easily as other men's.
Ah, how would you know? How many men have you killed?
None so far, but I look forward to the chance.
You know that your stepfather is a friend to the Rinches.
I do not acknowledge my stepfather.
But he is your mother's husband, and half of your sister's blood is his. It is gringo blood.
Hers, not mine. If it were mine, I would be willing to see half of it spilled to rid me of the taint.
That is easy to say when you have not bled. But I have, and I found no satisfaction in it. I am satisfied only when I see the gringo bleed. He has caused all the problems of our people. He has murdered our kin, and stolen our land, and raised his own flag over it. I wish we could call down a pestilence that would cause him and all his kind to die in slow agony. I thought we had it once, in the time of the rebel Chino Cortina.
Uncle, perhaps you are the new Cortina.
Ha! I could not polish his boots, nor those of my father, but I do what I can.
And it is my pleasure to help you.
You are a good boy. We may yet see a day when not a gringo remains south of the Nueces. This country belongs to the Mexicanos. We will take it back when the time is right. But not you. Not today.
Tony didn't answer. No matter what Tio Lupe said, he was going. As the evening light faded, Jericho Jackson held his fidgeting horse outside the corral and watched more than a dozen men saddling mounts. All were armed with a pistol and either a rifle or a shotgun. Bert Hatton looked up at him, for Jericho stood taller and broader in the shoulders than any man who worked for him.
You think Chavez will come tonight, Jericho?
Tonight, tomorrow night, doesn't matter. Gonzalez told me they'll be coming, and we'll be laying for them when they do.
Gonzalez was a spy, useful because he would do anything for money. He played the role of a harmless, poverty-stricken curandero, a faith healer, and moved freely whatever information was to be gathered. His information was always for sale.
I never trusted that sneaking Mexican. He may be lying to you.
He likes my money too much to take that chance. Besides, he knows I'd gut him like a catfish.
What about the boys holding the herd? They could get killed.
I've told them to hightail it at the first sign of trouble. Let the raiders have the cattle. They won't take them very far. Just when they think they're getting away, we'll hit them like a hailstorm. There'll be dead Mexicans laying all over the place.
Maybe a few of our boys.
They're being paid to take the chance. If any of them let some Mexican kill them, it'll be because they wasn't good enough to earn their wages.
Maybe we'll be lucky and get Lupe Chavez.
No, he's too cagey to go out on these forays himself. He sends other people to take the risks. But maybe we'll catch his nephew, Jim McCauley's stepson. If we do, I don't want anybody killing him. That's a pleasure I want to save for myself.
Jericho's grim eyes made Hatton feel cold. Jericho wanted to take revenge on Tony Villarreal for the death of his wife's nephew. Nobody had dared tell him the truth, that the boy had died in an abortive raid on a traveler's camp and not at the hands of Chavez's men. Hellfire and brimstone would rain down if Jericho ever found out. Hatton made up his mind that he would not stay to see that day. At the first good opportunity, he would gather up whatever belonged to him, and whatever else he could easily lay his hands on, then leave this part of the country. He could not escape into Mexico, for too many people knew him there and had knives sharpened and waiting for his throat. The word California had a nice ring to it.
Let's try not to let none of them get away. I'd like to take a dozen dead Mexicans and pile them up for everybody to see. Like McNally done that time in Brownsville. Them people have got no respect for us, but they do respect force. I don't see why the Lord don't send down a plague to kill every one of them north of the Rio Grande, maybe south for 100 miles.
They must have done something awful to make you hate them so bad.
They made me an orphan when I was just a barefooted kid. Left me to root hog or die. Damn right I hate them. I've been paying them back ever since, and I ain't half done yet. I hope I can live to see the last of them gone.
Andy's heartbeat quickened. It came from the north, but he was unable to judge how far. A ranger named Bill Hewitt pushed his horse into a run.
Hold up there, Hewitt. Don't get in a rush.
The fighting started and we ain't in it.
Get there in our own good time. Let them have at one another while.
There's white men in trouble up there.
And not a Sunday school teacher amongst them. It's no great loss if some of Jericho's outfit get dirt shoveled in their faces. Ain't much better than Mexicans.
Andy had found the tracks shortly after daybreak. A dozen or so horsemen had crossed the river in the night between Andy's station and Farley's. He had hurried to let Farley know, then had backtracked to fetch Len while Farley sent word up the line. It had taken a couple of hours for all the rangers to gather. Donahue had led them in an easy trot, following a trail so plain that a tenderfoot couldn't have missed it. Andy understood Donahue's lack of haste. The sergeant was letting Jericho's men administer the bulk of the punishment and take some themselves. The rangers would arrive in time to sweep up any remnants of the raiding party. Jericho's losses would cause no regret, except in Jericho's camp.
With any luck, the rangers would get most of the credit without it costing us anything except some shells.
What does it matter who gets the credit?
Wake up and think, Badger boy.
Donahue would sell his mother to get promoted to lieutenant. If the papers in San Antonio and Galveston get wind of this, he's liable to make it. And I bet my saddle and fixings he'll make sure they hear about it.
Though Andy had reservations about Donahue, it had not occurred to him that the sergeant might have planned this little campaign more to advance his career than to punish outlaws.
There ain't many people do things just from the goodness of their heart. Most of them look out for themselves first. You better learn to do the same if you don't want to set your boots under a poor man's table all your life.
If this was true, Andy thought, perhaps headquarters in Austin would assign Donahue to some post where he could consider the adversaries to be worthy of his attention. He had only contempt for Mexican border jumpers. Hewitt kept pushing out in front, eager to get into the fight. Len was but little behind him, pistol already in his hand. A growing cloud of dust indicated that gunfire had spooked the cattle into a stampede. Through the swirling of hoof-stirred earth, Andy began to see horsemen circling about. They were too busy firing at one another to try to control the herd.
Spread out! Shoot every Mexican you see!
Andy followed Len, wanting to keep him in sight because he feared the excitement might make Len careless. But in the dust and confusion, he lost him. A Mexican appeared, a white horseman in close pursuit. The man jumped to his feet and raised his hands.
No!
But the pursuer rode within point-blank range. <coughs> 200 yards away, he saw a white rider slump from the saddle. The Mexican then leaned over the fallen man, aiming his pistol at his head. Before the Mexican could pull away, however, a ranger had him in his sights. Andy's stomach turned. Both sides were turning this into an orgy of killing. Donahue was chasing a fugitive, but pointed at another who was spurring eastward.
There goes a Mexican! Don't just sit there, Pickard! Get the son of a bitch!
By reflex, Andy set off in a long lope. Sensing someone behind him, he looked back and saw Farley 20 yards in the rear, trying to catch up. The runner's bay horse was long-legged and strong of wind. For a while, it lengthened its lead. The chase stretched to 1 mile, then two. Andy began to doubt that he could overtake the raider. But gradually, the bay weakened, its hide glistening with sweat, its mouth white with foam. Someone else appeared behind Farley. It was neither Mexican nor ranger, so Andy figured it was a Jericho man. Farley pointed a pistol at him, and the rider turned back. Andy tried to aim at the fugitive, but uneven ground made it impossible to hold the pistol steady.
Stop, or I'll shoot you!
The threat was hollow. Surely by this time the runner realized that if he was not shot now, he would be shot soon after his capture. That was the fate of any raiders unfortunate enough to be run down. The bay stumbled, and its rider tumbled to the ground. Andy thrust the pistol toward the fugitive's face.
Raise your hands!
He saw blood spread over the man's shirt front. As the raider looked toward him, recognition struck Andy like a fist to the jaw. This was Tony Villarreal.
Go ahead, you damned rinche. If you're going to shoot me, do it.
Andy lowered the pistol, his mind in turmoil.
Don't shoot him, Farley. This is Big Jim's stepson.
The hell you say? Looks to me like you already shot him.
Not me. Somebody did it before I saw him. How bad are you hit, Tony?
What difference does it make? If you don't kill me, Jericho will. They're killing everybody.
Andy dismounted and turned to Farley.
Let's see what we can do for him. At least stop the bleeding.
Ain't much we can do. He's a Mexican. Jericho's crowd will finish him off.
Not if we can get him away from here.
Where to? Not to the river. We'd run into some of Jericho's men as sure as you're born. They might shoot him and us.
Andy jerked his head, motioning to the east.
We can take him to his folks. Now, I don't think Jericho's outfit will try for him if we can get him to Big Jim.
Maybe not, but Donahue will raise hell. Fire us both, more than likely.
After what I've seen this morning, being a ranger doesn't shine all that bright anyhow.
I don't need no help from no wrenches. Catch my horse for me and I'll take care of him myself.
You fall out of the saddle before you went 200 yards. We ain't doing this for you. We're doing it for your folks. I don't see where we owe you a damn thing.
He took off his neckerchief and wadded it.
Hold that against the wound. Maybe it'll slow the bleed until we can get you out of Jericho's reach.
He looked back, fearing he might see someone coming. Farley brought up Tony's bay.
I doubt this horse has got many miles left in him.
If he quits, we'll ride double.
He helped Tony up into the saddle.
Hang tight to the horn. I'll ride close by and try to catch you if you start to fall off.
I can take care of myself.
You've done right poorly at it so far.
Andy mounted, and Farley moved around to the other side.
You must lack trouble, Badger boy. You're fixing to get us into a whole mess of it.
If you want to leave, go ahead. I can manage alone.
It's always pleased me to aggravate people I don't like. I don't like Donahue much, and I got no use at all for Jericho. Let's move before him or some of his gun-toters come looking for this hot-headed idiot.
Go to hell.
Some people got no appreciation. They'd complain if they was hung with a brand new rope.
Despite the risk that Tony's tired horse would give out completely, Andy held to a brisk pace for the first couple of miles. Then he slowed, but Tony was barely able to grasp the horn and stay in the saddle.
Maybe we'd better tie him on.
He could fall and get tangled in the rope. I seen a man drugged to death once. It was a gut-grabbing sight.
Tony, you'll just have to grit your teeth and hang on.
The young man made no response. Andy wasn't sure he was still able to comprehend. Farley turned in the saddle.
I knew our luck wouldn't hold. Somebody's catching up to us.
Andy looked back. He saw two horsemen.
They're not rangers. Must be some of Jericho's people.
People, hell. One of them is Jericho himself, big as a barn door.
Andy started looking for a defensive position, but saw nothing except low, thorny brush and almost flat ground.
Poor place to stop and put up a fight.
Most of the fights I ever had was in poor places. Best we get down and stand behind our horses.
Andy and Farley both struggled to get Tony to the ground without letting him fall. Andy drew his rifle and propped it across the saddle. The red-bearded man seemed too large even for the tall horse he rode.
I told you it looked like Big Jim McCauley's kid. We'd like to have lost him.
Jericho smiled coldly at the sight of Tony, leaning against his saddle and holding on to keep from falling.
Well, he's caught now.
Jericho seemed to recognize Andy.
Thanks for catching him for us. I'll take charge of him now.
No, you won't. We've got him under arrest.
I don't see no badges on you.
They never issued us any, but we're rangers just the same.
You've done your job. You can turn this renegade over to me and go on about your business.
He is our business. He's our prisoner.
You're a long ways from a jailhouse. Give him to me and he won't get away again. Not now, not ever.
We've seen how you handled the others you've caught.
There's just one way to treat a bandit. Kill him where you find him. No judge, no lawyers, no jury that might turn him loose and let him do it again.
Do you know who he is?
He's a nephew of Lupe Chavez.
And he's Big Jim McCauley's stepson.
Makes no difference. He's a bandit. It's open season on all of his kind.
Andy's rifle had been pointed upward toward the sky. He lowered the muzzle so Jericho could look directly into it. Instinctively, Jericho tried to draw to one side, but Andy let the front sight follow him. The rancho made a big target.
Now, sir, if you'll back off, we'll be on our way.
I never seen a ranger that had $2 in his pocket. I'll pay you a good price for him. What'll you take?
They ain't buying and selling people anymore. Didn't you ever hear of Abraham Lincoln?
They shot him.
You ain't getting our prisoner.
I don't know where you figure on taking him, but wherever it is, I don't think you'll get there.
Jericho jerked his head.
Come on, before I let my temper make me kill a couple of rangers.
You sure put the Indian sign on him. I guess it's all that Comanche in you.
You heard what he said. He ain't giving up.
Andy turned to Tony.
Let's move while he's trying to figure out what to do next.
Andy helped Tony into the saddle. Tony touched his hand against the wound in his side.
Still bleeding a little. Keep pressing my neckerchief against it.
That dirty neckerchief is liable to kill him if the bullet don't.